the hatched panels. We see that, as expected, high-strain control bees had lower titers or lower expression of vitellogenin than did low-strain bees. We also see that our knockdown was very effective in that both high and low-strain vitellogenin knockdowns had significantly lower levels of VG relative gene expression than the control bees. When we looked at insulin-like peptide 1 relative gene expression, we saw no effective treatment or strain, although our sample sizes were relatively small with large variance, which may be masking any effect that we might see in a larger study that we have currently underway. When we looked at insulin-like peptide 2 relative gene expression, we did see a difference in both strain and treatment in the low-strain bees. Low-strain bees had significantly higher levels of insulin-like
in turkey, and raised thousands of queens from a single queen. And then they can mate with, hopefully you've provided a few large colonies here that might provide the males for mating, and you can get adequate mating, hopefully. Okay, so that was a great boon because now, one operation, you make tens of thousands of queens for sale. Okay. Just a little bit of background here. The commercial queen producers in the United States are located primarily in two regions, California, which I think hereafter is called the West, but maybe California in some slides, and the South, kind of the Southeast, more or less. Each of these dots represents a queen producer and who may sell from a few thousand to 30 or 40,000 queens or more per year. And this is just a picture of a queen producer from California, and these large colonies in the front are what they're making queen cells in. Oh yes, so what I wanted to say was back in 93, 94, myself and a postdoc at the time collected samples from the commercial queen producers in the United States. We wrote them all. We actually probably collected samples from about 80% of them. And it was our way to kind of sample the commercial population. One way that you could do it would be to try to visit every beekeeper in the United States and take a couple of queens. Another way is to go to these queen producers and sample daughters from their queen mothers, okay, the mother queens that they're using to do the grafting, and that's what we did. And this is sort of a survey data from these queen producers. And what you see is that in 93 was, we collected the West, and 94 we collected the South. So that's why it's over a two-year period. But these queen producers used 603 queen mothers to produce about 900,000 queens. And if you figure that we have 2.3 million, now we probably had about 2.5 or 2.6 million back then. Those 600 queen mothers were producing daughter queens through replace or requeen about one-third of the colonies, the managed colonies in the United States. Okay, so that seems like a genetic bottleneck. This is Debbie Delaney. She did a parallel collection of samples in 2004-2005 from the West and the South also. Let's see what's happened. Maybe we've learned something, or maybe things have changed. Actually, it's exactly the same. What she found was that beekeepers were using about 473 queen mothers to produce about 900,000 queens. Kind of the same deal, except now if there's only 2.1 or 2.3 million, it's actually a greater proportion. So basically, all the queens that they were selling were coming from a fairly small number of queen mothers. And this works out to be about 1,800 daughters that are sold for every queen mother that's used. Okay, well, that's interesting in itself and maybe surprising, but what does that mean? And is there actually any measurable effect of this on the genetic diversity of the bees themselves? And with Debbie's work, we're actually able to use some more sophisticated genetic markers to kind of look at this question, microsatellites. And also the, let's say, more primitive markers that we used back in the early 90s of mitochondrial DNA. So in 1994 in California, in these commercial populations, you can see that these three different C haplotypes, which by the way are just markers that are predominant in Italian honeybees, Carniolan honeybees, and Caucasian honeybees also. So these are markers that are predominant in the honeybees that are preferred commercially. And you can see that only 3% of those commercial bees that we sampled actually had the marker from Apis mellifera mellifera, right, the dark bee of Northern Europe, which you recall was about 70% in Arizona feral colonies and about 33% in all the other states looking in the United States. 1 minute? Okay, excellent. Okay, 10 years later, we have, C3's disappeared, and that's not so impressive. If you compare this to the feral population, you see that there's extremely, extremely more diverse population at the time. The more interesting data really are these microsatellites. So in the West, in 1994, there were 128 different microsatellite loci alleles present in the 10 different loci that we looked at. And in 2004, only 92 of these were still around. So it was a loss of 36 alleles, which is about 25% of the alleles seem to have been lost in a decade. The South, we have more or less the same thing, 100 different alleles, and 76 were found 10 years later. However, okay, so it's about 25%, and we could estimate that this, or we could guess that this is possibly due to these bottlenecks or genetic drift caused by varroa destructor or the breeding practices. However, we did find new alleles. So there were 23 previously undetected alleles in California, which causes the net reduction to be about 10%, not 25%, and 20 previously undetected alleles in the southern population 10 years later. About 6% loss. Where do they come from? They could come from Russian. These new Russian bees have been brought in. They could be from people bringing bees in their pockets. They could be from Africanized bees. Or they could be because the beekeepers now in these locations are exchanging genetic material. And we actually looked at this using data that we had from South America and Africanized bees and other places. And we were able to at least identify some of the sources of these new alleles. In California, the 23 new alleles, 8 of them actually were from Africanized honeybees. 2 were from the feral population, which we now presume no longer exists. And 3 were from the South that had been brought over. And 10, we don't know where they're from. And you can read the same thing from the South. But basically, you can see that about 15 new alleles appear to have been contributed to the commercial population from Africanized feral populations now that we don't have it. So this is sort of the conclusion that this we sort of ameliorated the loss of genetic diversity. However, there's no longer likely to be sort of free sex allele diversity in the future, at least from European populations. And how can we counteract this? We might import additional stocks, and we may alter breeding practices to reduce this annual severity. And there's some things that we could think of for that. The very last slide. Consider germplasm imports from the old world, and it would be likely that for breeding purposes we would find more variability by looking at samples from the old world rather than other founded populations such as Australia, New Zealand. And other sort of management techniques that breeders could use would be to increase the number of drone mother colonies they use and increase this sort of resampling between the eastern and western population. So thank you very much, and sorry to run over.
Thanks. To become any of the different casts, and I'll focus on just on the asterisk side of the cast of the differentiation process because that's mostly what we're working on. So they can hatch from the egg to a larvae, and then as a larvae they molt into workers, and then they stay and they have regressive molts where they stay and form the workforce of the colony. But if the colony does need it, they can molt into a reproductive form, or they can go over here and molt into a pre-soldier and then on into a soldier. But we have to remember that this whole complicated process is a highly flexible process and depends on a number of different factors. Some of the different factors that have been hypothesized are things such as environmental factors, colony factors, or internal factors. Some of the internal factors are things that are going on within the individual. One of the ones that I'm focusing on is the morphological hormone, juvenile hormone. And it's been shown that it plays a role in CAS determination, mostly because the application of synthetic juvenile hormone 3 to workers causes individuals from workers to molt into soldiers. So for example, if you apply juvenile hormone to workers, around 14 days later they'll turn into pre-soldiers, and then around 14 days later than that, they'll turn into soldiers. Well, another factor that we are looking at is the role of nestmates, the role that nestmates have on other termites' caste differentiation. And we're specifically looking at the soldier caste. So for example, the soldier has always been thought of as this stereotypical role, you know, with their large mandibles, you know, defense only. And then they've also been shown to have chemicals that are supposed to be defensive. But the latest job and the number of things that we're looking at is the soldier's role in caste differentiation. Well, it's thought to be do this probably through a form of GH modulation, or maybe the chemicals coming from the individual are inhibiting other individuals from turning into pre-soldiers. And this is where our research is looking at. We're looking at the combination of juvenile hormone and these soldier head chemicals. So the hypothesis.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jinan. Today I'd like to talk about the transcription factor that modulates copy-breaking adaptation to plant defense. Transgenic plants containing Bt toxin genes has been effective to control insect pests, but insects become resistant to the Bt toxins, so people have studied on natural plant defensive compounds. But unfortunately, these compounds are effective only on early larval stages because of the insect adaptation by changing gene expression profiles such as gut protease. As an example, cowpea orchid is a storage pest of cowpea and other grain legumes. These seeds are damaged seeds by orchid larvae. And soybean system protease inhibitor is called SCN, is a plant defensive chemical. And Coleoptera insects cannot grow very well when they feed on SCN. This graph is the observation of larval developments and feeding on the SCN effects. Insects reared on SCN diets eat less and grow slowly during early larval stages compared to insects in regular diets. But insects recovered normal feeding and development at the fourth instar. So this indicates copy orchid can adapt to the SCN. And then we like to have a question. How the insects sense the toxins in diets and alter their protein expression patterns to overcome toxic effects? To answer the question, we need to understand about the biological functions of insect system protease in insect counter defense. System protease is a main digestive enzyme in many Coleoptera insects, like orchid. And orchid can adapt to SCN through expression of SCN insensitive system protease. So, to study the regulatory mechanism of insect counter defense, we targeted cathepsin B like system protease because CMKP is a highly induced gene by SCN. Northern blood analysis showed only SCN adapted insects expressed CMKP genes at the third and fourth instar. And CMKP has the occluding loop structure which prevents inhibitor from binding to this enzyme, so CMKP is insensitive to SCN. To deeply understand insect counter defense machinery, we decide to define the regulatory mechanism of CMKP transcription during orchid adaptation to SCN. Before I talk about my research, I'd like to give you a take-home message first. We identified regulatory cis elements, COOP, which is chicken ovalbumin upstream promoter in CMKP promoter, and we cloned a transcription factor, CMSVP, which is copy BRUKID7R. So, under normal growth conditions, CMSVP inhibits CMKP expressions. But insects are challenged by SCN, CMSVP cannot inhibit CMKP expression anymore. So, insects can overcome SCN inhibition through CMKP expression. To reach this conclusion, first we cloned CMKP from water from BRUKID guts. Then we tested the promoter activity of these fragments using transient transfection of K-reporter plasmid into Drosophila S2 cells. CMKP promoter induced the cat expression clearly compared to no promoter. And we to understand the interaction of nuclear proteins with the promoter element in CMKP promoter, we did electrophoretic mobility shift assay. We detected two shifted bands with different mobility from nuclear proteins between unadapted and SCN-adapted insects. Then we focused on first this interaction in unadapted insects for further analysis. To define the regulatory cyst elements, we did EMSA with progressively smaller subfragments of promoter. Then we identified Coop elements is the binding region in unadapted insect guts. Coop elements corresponds to the known DNA binding protein, which is 7-up. 7-up are members of nuclear steroid thyroid hormone receptor superfamily, and they bind to imperfect AGG TCA repeats. And 7-up can act as an activators or repressors, depend on the promoter context. Based on the negative regulatory function of 7-up, we proposed the hypothesis. Copy BRUKID 7-up, which is interacts with Coop elements, represses CMKP expression in